From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 176 with guest Chris Jackson. Recorded Thursday, September 2nd, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm here in Australia with my friend Chris Jackson. And of course, you've been on the show plenty, my friend.
How many times have I been on now?
Two or three. I mean,
a couple.
I know we did one in Europe, and we've done a couple over the phone. And I think you have one of the best jobs at Microsoft because you just go in and save the day.
Yeah, I certainly have one of the busiest jobs at Microsoft these days.
So many people need
saving. Yes.
So application compatibility is what we've generally talked about, one form or another, the whole shimming with Windows 7 and all those great features.
Yeah, well, we started back in the Vista days.
Right.
When we were so dealing with application compatibility and Windows apps for Windows Vista.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as everyone probably is aware by now, we haven't exactly deployed a whole lot of Windows Vista. And so the tide is really changing with Windows 7, where people are getting pretty serious about that.
Right.
And we've just really had in the past, 5 years that we've been working specifically on this problem of how to get people up to the profile of, I consider standard users might possibly exist.
Right. Yeah. Not everybody's an administrator.
You know, we've got lots of knowledge, lots of content. There's papers, there's videos, a lot of information out there on that. So that even though the size of the problem is a fairly respectable size problem, there are a lot of apps that need touch. Not all of it needs a heavy touch.
Right.
But, a decent percentage needs some kind of touch to get it going on a Windows 7 base install, either modifying policies or maybe using shims or whatnot.
Yeah.
But people know how to do that. What we're running into now is specifically with regards to their browser-based apps. Because before they fiddled with it, those are the first things they looked at. Now they're getting serious. They're really deploying it. They really love Windows 7.
Yeah.
And they're trying to fire up the browser and they're discovering, oh, wait a minute. I have apps I run here also. And I don't have that same 5 years of background on learning how to do these things.
Interesting. Because, of course, when we think web apps, it's going to run on everything. That was the whole point, wasn't it?
Well, we've heard that promise lots of times from lots of different people. But yeah, I mean, that's the idea is, any browser, any version of that browser.
Just work.
Yeah, but that doesn't. That's not realistic.
Right.
How many people out there, you talk to any web developer and they'll give you some grumble about, I'm so tired of writing IE6.css and everybody else.css. It's making me crazy.
Now, the line I've heard is, friends don't let friends run IE6.
Well, not many individuals choose to. I mean,
no.
The thing is that
the browser's 10 years old.
Okay, first of all, software is not like milk. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
But I mean, your point is fair in that we've come a long way in terms of browser standards and what matters. So
yes.
I mentioned the IE6.css, and the reality, if you sort of look back on the history of where we were with regards to standards, we kind of got a black eye, and fairly so, when it comes to standards. But it's not like we just never cared about standards. Who was the first browser to implement a commercial implementation of CSS parsing?
IE6.
IE3.
Really? IE3 had
IE3
a version
was
of
the very first commercial implementation of CSS.
Wow.
Who had the highest standards compliance of any browser on the planet when we released it? IE4.
Right.
Then IE5. Then IE5.5. And then IE6. In fact, IE6 was so standards compliant compared to its predecessor that we left its predecessor's rendering engine in the browser, and we called it Quirks Mode because we couldn't expect everyone to upgrade their apps. It was that discontinuous of an evolution.
Yeah, but I think the only reason that IE6 has hung around as long as it has is it was the default browser for XP, and XP has been so persistent.
Well, it's because of their apps. When I talk to audiences all the time, and I say, how many of you love IE6? I've never had a single hand.
Nobody loves IE6.
But then I say, how many of you like your apps to work? And everyone's like, I would like my business to not go under because none of my things can still happen.
Right. So are you running into situations then where people are unable to migrate off of XP because of IE6 dependent web apps? Is that what you're saying?
It did. Yeah, that's the big escalation we have right now in Windows 7 deployments is I'm on IE6 and my web apps don't work. And the reality of the matter is, you know, and we're talking about this week, it's not as if the problem itself is so hard. If you look at all of your apps, if you get 50% Windows apps and 50% web apps,
right.
I'm just to make the math easy.
Right.
I look at my Windows apps, you know, on average, I can expect to have to touch maybe 30% of those.
Okay.
On average, for my web apps, I can expect to have to touch maybe 25% of those.
Right.
So I'm starting off with fewer of them being a problem.
Yes.
And of the ones that are a problem, I can usually eliminate most of those problems with a very light touch that fixes hundreds, if not thousands, of apps at a time by configuring different policies. The challenge is not that the problem is so much more difficult. The challenge is that we spent 5 years teaching people about how to fix Win32 applications,
right,
and about 5 months talking about IE-based applications. It's just that there's not as much knowledge out there.
Sure. So is it basically the same process? Is still shims and policy settings and so forth?
Well, you don't have shims per se because shims apply to a process. I mean,
right.
I guess potentially you could. I have had one instance where I applied a shim to iExplore.exe to fix up. It happened to be a Java app, but to fix up the Java application inside the browser. But I mean, I actually had to go through and exclude iExplore.exe and everything else. I just did an exclude star and an include on the specific OCX I needed to target. I hate doing that. If I have the choice not to do that, I'm going to pick not to do that every single time.
Yeah, no kidding. So where are people really stumbling? Is this just a policy issue?
Either it works straight away.
Right.
Or I'm going to have to do something with the policies, right? Either configuring the group policies that affect how it behaves on the machine, or in some cases, configuring the server to include some additional information to guide the browser via the headers. Or I'm changing code. Like,
okay.
You don't have quite as many intermediate steps. I'm either, you know, do nothing, change a policy, or fix the code.
Right. Well, and I mean, we're trying to be IT folks here. We prefer not to dip into the code because the odds are that app is pretty old and whoever worked on it is long since moved on.
Well, hopefully we're not basing our business on stuff that we can't ever change again. I mean, if we land in that situation, we kind of like to get out of that. But yeah, there are some options.
Right.
You know, and we, you know, we'll be giving some case study information. I don't think I'm allowed to disclose their name yet, but I have already lined them up to come and join us. We're doing a virtual roundtable,
nice.
Springboard virtual roundtable on September 30th at 9:00 in the morning Pacific time, where we're going to be talking about them. And I got this customer an invite.
Nice.
And they talk about how they had a couple of policies that are generally good ideas from a security standpoint. Things like mixed content setting. They had some websites that were taking HTTP and mixing it with HTTPS. The browser will say, hey, you're mixing some stuff up. That's
right.
Not cool. But they said, we have so much of it that we would rather have IE8 and all of the security features it provides except that feature than to have to stick with IE6, which not only doesn't have that feature, it doesn't have all the other features, which could be giving me a more secure browser experience today.
So by switching, when they switched to IE8, were they just getting this extra dialogue pop that said, you know, you're mixing modes?
Yep. So they just turned off that feature for now.
Right.
And then developed a follow-up plan to get rid of that.
Right.
You know, the same with SSL. They discovered along the way that they had been sharing SSL certificates across servers.
Yes. The thing you were not supposed to do.
Sure. But IE6 was letting them get away with that.
Yeah.
And they said, well, for now, we had to spin up a PKI project. But in the interim, they could turn that feature off and still get all of the rest of the benefits.
And these are essentially just settings in IE that you can push down as group policy.
Right. Yeah. And that's which is one of the big benefits of IE is that you have nearly 1,500 group policies that you can use to configure things.
Right. To tweak and tune. So in the test bed, I can simply go through and adjust the policy, adjust the setting by hand. Once I have it right, figure out what the group policy is and use AD to push it out to my space.
Exactly.
And that,
yeah, and that's the spot you want to be in. I mean, it's a great benefit that we have 1,500 things that we can possibly tweak.
Yeah.
I think one of the more interesting things, and I don't come from a policy background. I come from a developer background,
right?
So I'm the guy responsible for a lot of the IT pros' pain. So now that I live in your world, I am sorry. I didn't mean it. I promise.
I didn't know it was so horrible.
But you know, but one of the things I have noticed is that the grass is always greener on the other side. You get into this wonderful world of group policies that lets you control hundreds of thousands of desktops at a time, and you look at it, and it's like this big pile.
Yes.
And so I see people trying to go through and evaluate every individual one on its own standalone merits, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Right.
You just have, once you start grouping them together into your actual business scenarios, and I don't think we have done as good of a job on that as we could have. That's one of the things that I've been talking about a lot when I talk about IE and group policies and the things you would change for different scenarios, is to compile settings into specific scenarios, such as the compatibility scenario. How do I make more stuff work?
Yeah, and I like the idea of having this as a collection of policies to make this app work. Because right now, if somebody, you know, somebody does a security audit, goes through, and why are you allowing mixed mode in the browser? That's just a stupid thing to do for security. What are you, dumb? It's lost in the institutional memory that we did this to make this app work. And by that same token, when that app got replaced, nobody turned that policy off because they didn't necessarily know it was associated. So again, we really need a better mechanism to capture why policies exist, how they work in concert, and then maybe have some mechanism to review them.
Exactly.
That's an interesting set of problems. Is there other thing issues in what folks have done in apps that run in IE6 besides these specific settings? Is there bad HTML or you know, certain meta tags that are
hurting us? I
don't
want to cast aspersions on anything. I mean, people are designing HTML and they're...
You can't cast aspersions on IE6 that haven't already been cast.
Hey, IE6 is still a supported browser. So if there are any problems that we have, we're going to go fix them. So
does it go down with XP?
Am I allowed to say Antichrist on your show?
Yes, you may. Many people have said far worse than that.
IE6 is not the... Oh, I guess I probably shouldn't say that. IE6 is not evil.
Okay.
By any means. At the time, it was perfectly good. But,
it's,
you know,
just
I
old.
Think that there are business benefits of getting to the standards compliance that we have available in IE8.
Yes.
But so when it comes to taking an inventory stuff that was designed for IE6, it's not like it's tied to it. It can't work on anything else. It's just that that's the only thing it was tested on. When we're making that transition, the thing to keep in mind is making sure I'm targeting a specific rendering engine and understanding how it works in the other ones. So if I think back to IE6, I think I mentioned that IE6 at the time was so standards compliant that we kept the old rendering engine in the product.
Right, the 5.5 engine.
Right, which we called Quirks Mode.
Right.
So if you've heard of Quirks Mode, that's where that comes from. That's the old 5.5 compatibility that we had in place because we've always cared about compatibility with the browser. So when we moved to IE7, we got rid of the IE6 standards mode engine and had the significantly more standards compliant, still not good enough, but more so IE7 standards mode, and we kept Quirks mode.
Right.
So we still had two different modes, and you would opt into them using the doc type. Well, with IE8, someone had what I thought was one of the better ideas, which is, well, we already have two. Why can't we have three? And so what most people don't realize is that IE8 has three different rendering engines. We've got Quirks mode or 5.5 compatibility mode.
Right.
We've got the IE7 standards mode engine and the IE8 standards mode engine. So if I'm currently running in standards mode, I'm going to start off of an internet site running IE8 standards, which is significantly more compliant with established standards, HTML 401, CSS 2.1.
Right.
If I click on the compatibility view button that switches me back into IE7 mode, that takes me out of a switch mode between 8 standards and Quirks back to a switch mode between 7 standards and Quirks.
Okay.
So now I've gone from 8 standards to 7 standards. Well, what if I was running in 6 standards? If I was running in IE6 standards mode, I'm halfway between Quirks at 5.5 and 7 standards. Which one's going to work better? The easy one to get to is to drop me into 7 standards. I just click the button and boom, that happens. I can do that via group policy.
Mm-hmm.
But what if Quirks is closer to my particular standards that I was building on for IE6 than 7 standards? That can be the case. I mean, I've worked with organizations where they take their rendering issues and a majority of them are fixed by dropping back to Quirks. Not all of them, but if you can make large swaths of your problems disappear by dropping it into Quirks mode, I mean,
that's pretty
a pretty effective fix.
So how do you turn on Quirks mode?
You can opt into it in the using a meta tag. You can edit the HTML, remove the doc type,
right?
Which is how we implement the switch in the first place. Or you can add a meta tag. But the easier way without actually touching every individual page, which no one wants to do unless you're the developer, is to spit out a header from the server. So configure IIS to just say, hey, you know what? There's an XUA compatible header.
Yeah.
I drop that in. This one needs Quirks mode for now, and that can get it fixed.
Yeah.
Would love to have a policy-based solution. I believe, you know, we're looking into whether we can provide an extension to group policy to enable that. I don't have it today. But for now, I can do that not as easy as by policy, but at least I can just grab the server, modify the headers I'm spitting out, which is way, way better than having to go in and change the code.
Yeah, just a better way to get at those header alterations. But it's but that means going to IIS for that.
Oh, anyone, you can modify headers.
Yeah. But I mean,
I just picked IIS as an example of a web server. But if you're running Apache, Apache will spit out headers.
Yeah, yeah. Let me restate that. You have to go to the web server for that. This is not something I do from a group policy. I don't talk to IE about it. I'm getting it at the source.
Right.
Neither one of those seems horrible. Right? It just sounds like things you have to sort of work your way through. The challenge is
just figuring unfamiliarity.
It out.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It isn't harder. It's just less familiar. And anytime people are less familiar, they're scared. Just like shims. When I first started talking about shims, people were terrified. They'd never heard of it.
Right.
They're like, who the heck is this guy?
What are you
who's
doing
telling
to my
me
apps?
About this stuff? And they're taking it from using this black voodoo magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get it. Well, whereas nowadays, I mean, you know, I think people adopt a fairly smart attitude, which is no one goes out of the way looking for chances to use them. No one goes, oh, yes, I get to use shims.
It's a shim day.
no one gets excited about that. People instead just say, you know what, here's a tool. It fits in, you know, in this scenario, right? I'm waiting for a vendor update, and I don't want to have to block my deployment because of it.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for an update from the internal team. I don't want to have to make them ship an interim version right now if they were scheduled to drop one in January.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just use a shim fix for
Work
now to
it.
Buy them the time.
I also think that Windows 7 has done a great job of making a non-threatening interface to many of those shims. That it's not as big a deal to go in and tweak the configuration for your app. With the application property settings, just seems less scary now.
Well, we've actually had that for a while.
Yeah.
Just people sort of have discovered that a little
bit. Yeah, we're
more
familiar with it now.
Yeah.
People don't blink at the idea that I can go in and make that setting or can deploy an app with all of that configured in it.
Well, the other neat thing in terms of getting familiar with shims is that we now are also, I don't know if you knew this, but we ship Stock Viewer, which is the demo app. I used to use it for all of my demos. I built it for TechEd 2007 North America.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally I built it to do a lab. I have a whole lab guide I wrote out, and I started using it for demos, and now everyone else is using it for demos, so I don't use it anymore. I'm using real apps. It was actually really funny. I was investigating some real production apps, including our latest and greatest version of Communicator and how it has some compatibility challenges.
Interesting.
And how we investigate that.
Yeah.
But that shipping is part of ACT now.
Stock Viewer is now shipped as part of ACT.
It is shipping as part of ACT, which is so now. You know, what I tell all the kids is if you want to have a shipping Microsoft product, you have two paths you can choose to take. Number one, you can go to university, you can study in computer science, you can spend a lot of time learning how to write really high-quality applications, learn how to master the technical interview,
mm-hmm.
and then sort of work your way through the ranks of the, you know, Microsoft engineering field. Or option number two, you can do what I did, which is major in psychology. After you get out of school, be a DJ. And then after you're done DJing for a while, just starting to write computer programs, eventually get hired by Microsoft for reasons you can't quite explain, and then write the worst application in the world, and you'll have a shipping Microsoft
there you
product.
Go.
Right? Either way, really is an option.
Well, and that app was built that way so that it's testable, right?
Yeah,
it is
shimmable. Actually broken on purpose, and that was the reason why it took 3 years to get it to ship and act, is because we have an internal quality bar in Microsoft called release-only quality, which doesn't let you ship bad code. Its whole intention is to catch things that are suboptimal in terms of code. Of course, I set off every single red flag that they have.
But that was the intent.
Exactly. And I was like, no, it's doing that on purpose. If we fix those bugs, there's no point in shipping the software.
Don't fix it. We won't need it.
Yeah, that took 3 years to get past that hurdle, but
That's
we finally
hilarious.
Made it there.
It's very, very funny that because, of course, it's all about how do I shim this app to make it behave properly.
Exactly.
All right.
Which is why we had the old one that was all based on all the Windows 98 apps, which were completely irrelevant in the enterprise.
So what do you think IE9 is going to do to this landscape? Are they going to ship IE9 with 4 rendering engines?
If you actually look at the platform preview, the latest build, go to the debug menu, and you will see all 4 of them. You'll see the IE5 engine. You'll see the 7 standards, 8 standards, and 9 standards.
Nice.
So yes, my guess is, I mean, I don't predict the future. I did not look up on the spec. Mm-hmm. I cannot say authoritatively it will have 4. All I can say is today in the platform preview, it has 4.
And you still wonder why they didn't just make a version that had the IE6 engine in it so that we could just drop back to that mode. Oh, I've touched a button there. It's a good thing this is audio. We can't record the look on the face.
I'm afraid I don't have that answer for you.
That's a fair thing to say.
I would, in 2020 hindsight. I mean, we never did that before. We always just kept the previous one working.
Yes.
You know, I think that in hindsight, we should, you know, had we implemented, you know, more than 2 in IE7, we perhaps would not have been in that position.
But it is interesting to think that for the most part, folks deploying operating systems deploy the current browser and rarely upgrade. The number of installations of XP that still run IE6, they've never moved them. It just seems curious to me. And for that token, I feel like IE9 is not going to be important until Windows 8 ships. Because that's when it's really going to get adopted.
Yeah, see, I doubt that. I think the compelling reason, I mean, the reason that's where we have so many blocked upgrades mm-hmm. is app compat. Like, it's not like people see IE8 today and think, oh, there's no compelling value for me to go there.
Right.
They see that, and if they stop and spend the time to think about it, they can almost always identify their ROI that's going to pay for the app compat project.
Yes.
If they spend the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm seeing is a lot of customers sort of don't spend the time thinking about why they want it. And so if you don't think about why you want it, what does it seem like? It seems like your Windows 7 upgrade tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it actually, in the end, can pay for itself, particularly around security. There's a ton of great stuff around security. There's some things around user experience, but they're platform level things. That's actually one of the secrets that people have discovered is rather than just giving developers a platform, figure out how you can start building on that platform right away
mm-hmm.
and release the browser with, you know, maybe a search accelerator for your internal web applications built in with, you know, an accelerator in line that can do a query against some internal database. I mean, it's a relatively short amount of XML to start leveraging it in the organization, you know, against some web service. I mean,
but it's funny how those little wins are what actually get things to move.
Yeah, and I think with IE9, it's going to be even more profound because if you think of, I mean, let's pick one enterprise scenario,
mm-hmm.
training websites. Training websites have all of this work that they do to get video, to get audio, to get things synchronized, which require all kinds of third-party plugins.
Yes.
With HTML5,
that's just
part of the spec.
Yes.
You know, just think, start reauthoring that, and you think of how much time you're going to save from having to buy all these plugins to implement this core functionality that you need to do stuff.
I'm just thinking in terms of deploying new machines that don't have to have Flash installed on them. You know, all of those add-ins that are part of our base configuration.
I think it's going to be a long time before you dump, you know, Flash and Servlet and all those other guys, simply because there's so much existing stuff that's built there. And, of course, both of those development teams are going to be thinking about, okay, you know, just like they did in the past, what did Flash rise up to do? They'd rise up to fill the gap where HTML didn't fill.
Yes.
HTML is going to fill up a bigger part of the pool. There's still going to be more room on the outside of that to get more edge cases, and they're going to start focusing on that.
Yeah, they'll just move out to the new niche, whatever.
So yeah, I don't think that's going to be the death toll for any. I mean, I think we're making them work hard. They can no longer just say, "Oh, just take what we already have and make it better, faster, better, faster, better, faster." And they instead have to think of, "Well, now let's find a new playground where we can sort of differentiate and extend the browser in interesting ways." But that'll still be around for a while. But I no longer have to use it, you know, in some tool set to build up things. I can get a lot of these things by default. Things are really fast. The performance is just absolutely spectacular in IE9 across a number of things.
Yeah, they've done a lot of work in the optimization space. Although, I mean, granted, we're all in beta here right now. People ask me about HTML5 and say, HTML5 will never be more beautiful than it is right now before it's shipped.
Well, yeah, and that's your future app compat problem now is that everyone's going to build compliant to the current standards, which are not finalized yet.
No.
So guess what's going to happen? They're going to change. And so suddenly everybody's implementation from 2010 of the HTML5 standards will be wrong because the standard will be different by the time it's finalized.
But by that same token, there's also incentive there to this. Even when you look at the specification, it's open to interpretation in certain areas.
Even HTML4, which is a final standard, has the exact same thing, which is whatever you want to do.
Yeah, however you actually want to implement that. So I think it's going to be very challenging to start rolling out HTML5 apps when we have multiple browsers with different interpretations of what HTML5 means.
Yeah, but at least you can know what that is today. I mean, people are doing a better job of working together.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, obviously, there's some very heavy competition, but it's no longer, you know, let's compete by, you know, making our own...
Our own set of tags.
We no longer have to invent. Like, the standards are ahead of the browsers.
Yeah.
For the first time. If you think of, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the browsers were ahead of the standards. Like, we could fully implement every standard that existed and, you know, still not have enough to deliver the scenarios that we thought were important.
Right.
So everyone had to say, okay, well, I've done all the standards and we still want to add more. I mean, DHTML was invented out of thin air.
Yeah. Because it was needed.
Yeah.
Folks wanted it, and I'm still not convinced we're not going to go down to that path to some degree, but that's more of a developer.
Yeah, but at least
issue.
We're still catching up. At least we now have standards that already go beyond what already exists.
Yes.
So we can instead all work together on saying let's, you know, because we all see the value, right? We want people to pick a browser based on the merits of the business functionality and the utility and the user experience that I get out of it, and not because I'm locked into it.
Right. Well, and I just see us being more disciplined around needing doc type specifications on everything we've got so that when we do move to IE9, it runs in IE8 mode if it makes sense. You know, we're more confident that this is a big jump in
sure.
browsers. It's going to be very different. HTML5 is different. So being careful on how apps are going to behave moving forward.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting place to be. So you're spending most of your time just working through these IE6 compat issues these days.
That's been the big focus, yeah, because we have enough people out there who are, you know, really familiar. There's a lot of people out there who are really good, to be honest, at fixing the Windows 7 stuff that I'm not as necessary.
Right.
You know, I still get the escalation calls. And it's not because I have any kind of special magic or special knowledge. It's just that I spend more time in a debugger than most people would intentionally choose to do.
Right.
And so I'm just in practice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it is a specialty.
We're ducking into WinDBG, you know, those are when I get the phone calls. But people can do, you know, there's a lot of people who are really great who can cover almost all the issues that are out there. Mm-hmm. What we're doing now is we're trying to get that same level of education and knowledge about IE to dispel that, because honestly, like I said, the problem space is smaller. It's more achievable. The value is there. Just people don't have the knowledge. And when you don't have knowledge, what do? You get conservative.
Yep.
And you hedge your bets, which only makes sense. You should hedge your bets when you're unclear of what the outcome should be. I just want to make people more clear of what an anticipated outcome is so they can be starting to make, you know, really wise intentional decisions about compatibility.
The next couple of months, we should see some papers and the webcasts and so forth, giving people more information on what they should be trying to get IE6 apps working on IE8.
Sure. We've got actually two papers that are coming out fairly shortly.
Mm-hmm.
I think like literally within the next week or two. One targeting IT pros and one targeting developers. Just kind of giving an overview of the space.
Right.
I've done a series of webcasts for TechNet. You know, the three-part series, or in the first part, we talked about the value prop and what are the features you want to get out of it. You know, not because I'm a sales guy, because if there's anything that I'm not, it's a sales guy. Mm-hmm. I am as geek as they come. And you know me.
Yeah.
Because understanding why you want it, well, first of all, you have to want it.
Yes.
Understanding why you want it is important when you have to make a trade-off.
The driver here is moving to Windows 7. Right.
And the driver's moving to Windows 7, but you shouldn't just say, oh, I have to have it. You should stop and think about why you want it, because if you want it because standards matter. I've talked to a lot of customers that just really want web standards. If they make public facing websites as a significant part of their business and they're based on IE6 today, they can't interchange their developers.
Sure. So that token, Windows 7 shouldn't be the driver here at all. It's getting rid of IE6. It's getting into the IE8, the more standards-compatible browsing approach.
Right. Getting to a modern browser compliant with standards. And there's some forcing functions. Like, you know, you need a modern browser to work with SharePoint 2010.
Sure.
Even YouTube will start complaining at you if you're IE6 these days.
Well, yeah. There seems to be a movement out there of websites that are putting up things saying, hey, we're not supporting IE6 anymore.
It might work, but it's expensive. I don't blame them for doing that.
Yeah,
the reason why we made the big overhauling standards changes in IE8 is not because we thought everyone needed more work to do. It's because developers were saying, listen, we're just not going to keep making IE6.css. We're done. It costs too much. It costs twice as much for us to make one especially for you.
Right, and it's not worth it. And so you have plenty of reason to move there. So yeah, I'm interested. It's interesting to back away from the move to Windows 7 and just focus on it's better to get this browser retired and make sure everything works properly. Chris, always fun to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.